This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Coming at you from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and I'll be with you all night long on VSiN, the sports betting network. You can always catch the show on SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We've got preseason football here, people. It is happening tonight, week two, Niners and the Chargers, and then the precursor, the Raiders and the Texans, to help us talk about Houston, not just for this one game. The season where they're the favorites to win the AFC South, with a quarterback in a pivotal contract year facing an injury to a guy that a lot of people projected to have a monster season in Jaden Higgins. We're going out to the Progressive Guest Line, welcoming in one of my favorites. He's Cole Thompson. Check him out at the Texans Wire, also SEC Unfiltered Podcast, at Mr. Cole Thompson on X. And he joins us live from Houston. Buddy, thanks for doing this as always. And when you saw the news earlier today, Jaden Higgins going down with the ACL, done for the year, how devastating was that for this offense for Houston?
Yeah, so I actually got to see the play happen live in person, and you knew pretty instantaneously this is not good. Now, the thought was, okay, he's going to miss a little bit of time, maybe not be good for week one. But to tear your ACL in a crucial year where right now the wide receiver room is already a weak point for the Texans, this is massive. And Texans fans will sit here and say, well, we still got 12 wins last year. We'll figure it out like we always do. No. That's not what you want to hear. What you want to hear is that you are good enough to replace a guy like Jaden Higgins and not miss a beat en route to becoming an AFC contender, a legitimate one that can go to the conference championship for the first time in franchise history. Right now, the Texans don't have that playmaker outside of Nico Collins at wide receiver. They really like what they got in the tight end position with Dalton Schultz. They feel really confident about the emergence of tight end rookie Marlon Klein inside that can do a lot of the receiving aspect of things. But that receiver spot is so detrimental, Dustin, because they're already dealing with the Tank Dell news of everything. And on top of that, Jalen Knoll, the third-round pick from Iowa State last season, has missed the entire start of training camp due to a finger issue and then also hamstring tightness. So going into tomorrow's preseason game, where starters are expected to seldomly play, and if they do play, it'll be for only one series, you have Nico Collins, Xavier Hutchinson, and sixth-round rookie Lewis Bond more than likely being your starters. And if not him, now you gotta go turn to undrafted free agent Jared Wayne, who has been on this roster for 4 years and has never made the active roster on a permanent basis. It is a major downfall. It's not a deciding factor that will completely derail the Houston Texans' opportunity of being the representatives of the AFC, but it ain't looking that pretty, man. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Okay, but this is also an offense that can't afford it, Cole. When you look at what's gone down the last couple of years, the regression of C.J. Stroud in this offense, they tried to blame Bobby Slowick. He left, and it kind of went the same way last year. What would you put your finger on as the reason why this Houston Texans offense has taken such a big step back?
There's a couple things. I think the first one was last season they had a lackluster run game, and that's a major element of a Nick Caley offense that needs to be implemented. I don't think that Caley was in the best position to be successful last year working alongside with C.J. Stroud. So you went out this offseason, you brought in a more physical, bruising running back in David Montgomery to hopefully get you to live in situations of second and four, a third and one, that will allow you to open up the playbook a lot more. The other thing is that they needed to get run blockers. They had very little success in the rushing department, not just because of the backfield, but also because of what they had in the trenches. So they go out, they re-sign Ed Ingram, who was their best run blocker a season ago. They bring in Keelan Rutledge from Georgia Tech. That guy is an absolute animal who is going to murder somebody on the football field. I'm not joking on that. He literally picks a fight every single day. They go bring in Wyatt Teller. They go bring in Braden Smith, two of the more high-profile, run-oriented offensive linemen in the NFL. So there's now an identity with this offense. But the main thing it comes back to is C.J. Stroud. And there were times last year where Stroud looked comfortable running the offense. Now, it wasn't perfect, but he was delivering clean strikes. He was finding open avenues. He wasn't rushing through his progression. And then came that game against the San Francisco 49ers, where he took a hit and immediately went to concussion protocol, and he missed the next three games. afterwards, when he came back, he played very timid. He went through a rush progression. He kind of decided to airmail some balls, and ultimately, it led to an underwhelming finish for C.J. Stroud that carried on into the postseason, where naturally he had the 7 turnovers in 2 games. So there is a definite disconnect between C.J. and Nick Caley when it comes to how they want to run the offense. But there also is a trust factor where I don't think C.J. totally is bought into the offense going into this year to where he feels like that he can run his best assets out there. But that's drastically going to have to change because the Texans right now have all the other pieces besides maybe a wide receiver too, where offensively they could be flirting as a top 12 unit. They could be a lot better in the red zone scoring. This is going to come down to C.J. Stroud, who, let me remind everybody, has not gotten paid, and he's watched all of his defensive counterparts also get paid.
Absolutely. Cole Thompson's with us, managing editor of the Texans Wire. Read him over there, covering the Houston NFL team, at Mr. Cole Thompson on X. The O-line was an issue the last couple years here, Cole. They really haven't addressed it, but my thought has always been run blocking is easier than pass blocking, and now the leaning on David Montgomery. How crucial is he going to be to the success of this team this season?
Massive. And I would actually go with both running backs, him and Woody Marks. But what's so great about the roles that they have, though, Dustin, is that you have a bruising physical running back that is known for getting the hard yards after contact in David Montgomery. And that is going to be the role they ask him to play. He is supposed to be setting the tone on first and second down. He is going to be utilized more exclusively inside the red zone when they're trying to punch it in for 6. But then you throw Woody Marks into the mix. And the thing that was so impressive about Woody Marks' career was when he was at Mississippi State, he was a receiver turned into a running back, but he never lost that receiving aspect. Then he goes to USC, picks up over 1,000 rushing yards, gets drafted, and he kind of doesn't get utilized in the passing game. But so far throughout all of training camp, he has been the Texans' second best receiver outside of, I would say, Jaden Higgins and Nico Collins, especially out of the backfield. There are design plays where they will have both running backs out there. They'll run split formation, and they will give you the RPO system to where you think that they're handing it off to David Montgomery, but then they throw the swing pass out to the outside to Woody Marks. They have a complete and total defense guessing. That opens up creases and avenues. So both of the running backs in some capacity, I think, are going to be massively utilized. For Montgomery, it's going to be in the passing game, but more so in the physical, setting the tone early on in drives. Woody Marks out of the backfield, that's a guy, if you're a fantasy fan, you probably want to take him in the later rounds just to be that flex option to where if things go south for one of your players, he may be able to save you on a week or two.
Cole, win totals 9.5 this year. They're the favorite to win the division. Notice I didn't ask you about the defense because I don't really have questions about it, but can the defense carry the load and lead them to winning the AFC South this year?
Yeah, I think so. And it's more so just because of where the rest of the AFC South is. I mean, if you really want to break it down, you got to ask yourself, what is Jacksonville going to be in year 2 underneath Liam Cohen? Because we all paid so much attention to the New England Patriots having the most easy schedule in NFL history. Dustin, Jacksonville had the 3rd easiest schedule in NFL history last year and proceeded to win 13 games. So it's not like they had a murderer's row. This year they play first place schedule. So what is that going to look like with them? I still have my wings and my doubts when it comes to the return of Daniel Jones. What does this new offensive line look like underneath Shane Steichen? What do we see from this defensive personnel? We just saw that Tyler Warren dealt with an injury today. What do you have at wide receiver that's really intimidating? Because you just trade away Michael Pittman. Your main guy that you just paid, Alec Pierce, has not done diddly squat throughout training camp. Josh Downs and Keenan Allen can only bail you out of trouble so many times. And you still have the question marks on names not named Jonathan Taylor. And the Titans, I think, are still a year away from being a year away. So the Texans' defense is going to have to be the backbone of this team, but that alone could get them to 10 wins. 10 wins may be enough to win this division. I think the Texans are going to be an 11-12 win team. It's when you get to the playoffs and have matchups against, let's go with New England again, or Buffalo, or Denver, or maybe even Cincinnati, who I have a lot of stock into this year, going with Joe Burrow as a potential MVP candidate. Do you have the offense that can counteract everything they throw at you? So that way, if it has to get into a shootout formation, you got the Jimmies and the Joes to win this battle.
Cole, before I let you go, where do you think the season ends up for Houston? You just mentioned the potential path there in the AFC. Do they get to the AFC title game? Do they represent the conference in the Super Bowl? Where does this team wind up when it's all said and done?
I think AFC title game is where they will end on up. And that was before the Jaden Higgins injury. I personally have my doubts that you are going to see an elevated version of CJ Stroud this year. Now, do I think he could play like the 16th or 17th best quarterback in the NFL? Yeah, absolutely. There is a reason to believe that this offensive line, having a stable run game, and knowing that there are weapons outside of Nico Collins, to think that the Texans will get competent quarterback play from CJ. But if you really want to look at what you need from him, Sam Darnold played like a top 12 quarterback last season, and that was good enough to get Seattle over the hump and get them into the Super Bowl and eventually hoisted the Lombardi Trophy. But I don't know if CJ Stroud and Nick Cayley offense will be anything more than just a middle of the pack, not even top and middle of the pack quarterback. And so when it comes down to that factor, I'm going to have my reservations. I look at Buffalo. I look at Cincinnati. Both of those teams have quarterbacks that I have much more faith in. I look at the Baltimore Ravens, where they're getting an upgrade and a facelift with Jesse Minter coming on in. How much different does that look? Because they still have a great rushing attack headlined by Derrick Henry. I think that those are teams that when you go ahead and say, what do I think of them? You can trust that their quarterback is going to be in the best position to get them over that next stage. And defense can win championships, but you still have to have a competent offense to get you there. The Texans will win for the first time in the divisional round. They will not make it out of there. There will be another representative in the AFC, not the New England Patriots, that will be playing in Los Angeles for an opportunity to win the first Lombardi Trophy.
He's Cole Thompson. Read him over at the Texans Wire. Also covers college football for SEC Unfiltered at Mr. Cole Thompson on X. Appreciate you staying up late and doing this with me, my friend. We'll chat soon.
Anytime, bud. Take care.
When we return, we'll look at that preseason matchup on Thursday night. The Raiders and the Texans, plus the Chargers and the Niners. What does Jim Harbaugh think another year of Justin Herbert getting ready to rock and roll?
Welcome back to Cashing Out. You're on VSiN, the sports betting network.
30 minutes from now, we'll check in on the top stories in college football, including a weird one. 16 players deemed eligible. Previously were not. Some on NFL teams coming back to college now. I'll tell you which team in the win total is most impacted by that news in about 30 minutes on the show. 45 minutes from now, top of the next hour, Eric Cohen Sportsline, his best bets, baseball, college football, NFL. Adam Hill in an hour and 15 minutes on the Raiders beat. And the Raiders are in the headlines right now because they are one of the two games we get on Thursday night in the NFL preseason. Welcome back into the show. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's VSiN, the sports betting network. And look, if you want to look back on week one and week two and think these trends can all carry over, I understand where you're coming from. I just think it's highly unlikely. This via our own Dave Tooley at View from Vegas on X. Underdogs 9-5-1 straight up, 12-3 against the spread. That's 80% in week one of the preseason. Road teams 9-7 against the spread. Unders 12-4. And you can't just universally apply this logic from week one to week two to week three in the preseason, because each organization treats each week differently. Some want to get the starters in action early, get it out of the way, and then put them on ice for the rest of this thing. Some wait and slow play it and don't play anyone until week two or week three. It's all about what your flavor is, what your preference is as a head coach and a franchise. And as far as this matchup with the Raiders and the Texans is concerned, we had a shift. And with that, we saw a little bit of movement with the spread. So in case you missed it, Jaden Higgins out for the year, torn ACL for the Texans. We saw this line move from the Raiders minus a half a point on the road to minus 1.5 now, total from 38 down to 37.5, because DeMeco Ryans has changed his mind. He will not play his starters in this preseason matchup. And here's what we know from the Raiders side of things. Clint Kubiak has not officially said if the starters will play. Kirk Cousins had one good series against Arizona in the opener. Reports coming out of this joint practice with the Texans down in Houston is Cousins hasn't looked very good against that Texans defense. Now, nobody really does, but you have to wonder if they want to make sure Cousins is ready to go and crisp, if we maybe get another series or two out of him in this matchup. Clint Kubiak did come out earlier in the week and say that Fernando Mendoza could see more first-team reps. They want him to improve on his anticipation, which is just something that a lot of college quarterbacks have an issue with at the next level. And while we've had the offenses at college, specifically the spread, infiltrate the NFL, where you're throwing more to an area and a player that's going to have a ton of space to work with, learning how to throw guys open at the next level is a little bit more of a challenge. So we should get a pretty decent run of Fernando Mendoza in this game. He met with the media earlier today and talked about getting a chance to play with some of the starters.
Be able to go against the Texans defense, which is also a top defense in the league. Go against them, be able to get some reps with the ones and against the superstars on their defense. And then obviously their twos are fantastic as well. We got so much work, whether it was move the ball, first down, third down, red zone, 2 minute. There were so many situations. And I believe overall it was a positive day. There were plays that I loved and plays that I wish I had back. But in reality, that's a lie. I wish I didn't have him back because it's a growing experience. And it's practice. It's practice, and this is what I love. And it's just a beautiful day to play football here, and I'm so happy. I have so many things to learn from today.
In order to get me to be that positive, a licensed physician would lose their license to prescribe medication. The SSRIs necessary to have me with that outlook that Fernando Mendoza has, that every day is a good day. I love it. I hope that it's something that can be consistent in his life and his profession as the quarterback of the Raiders, because that's impossible to teach. He walks into every situation looking at it as an opportunity to be positive and not take the negative away. And I just got to tip my hat. You also have to wonder when the real world starts to beat you down if you're Fernando Mendoza. But if I'm handling my organization, I want to give the keys to the car to someone that I should trust. That's the voice right there. And I think if we get a lot of Fernando Mendoza in this matchup against Houston, I really like the Raiders' chances. But more importantly, the Texans have kind of a San Francisco vibe now. With the Higgins injury and being depleted at receiver, you have to wonder what they're going to look like offensively while the Raiders try to get this new system implemented from Clint Kubiak, try to work Cousins in, try to work Mendoza in. They still have Aiden O'Connell, and then you'll get a ton of Jacob Clark at the end. I don't hate this quarterback room and situation in this spot. So before the show started, I took the Raiders minus 120 on the road. I think that they're going to come out looking to win and be more competitive in this game. Houston just wants to get through it and get to the regular season and not face any other major injuries. So I went minus 120 on the Raiders. I don't hate the under 37.5 either. But as far as this game is concerned, some other things to watch. Raiders bad against the run against Arizona in week one. Linebackers have to play better. We don't know how much of the starters we'll see. We'll see and how many of the guys that play in week one are actually going to be a part of that regular rotation on defense come the regular season. But that's worth noting. Raiders working in a couple young corners. Jermaine McCoy, who fell to them in the draft out of Tennessee, and Zeke Masses. They weren't very good in week one. They need to improve. And then for Houston, how do they handle things coming off the Higgins injury? That is the number one most noteworthy thing. And then after C.J. Stroud, who's not going to play, it's Davis Mills and Graham Mertz. And no offense to Graham Mertz and his family, he doesn't belong on an NFL field. I watched him in college at a couple different stops. There's nothing there that requires you to think too hard about Houston in this spot. If Mertz is playing a lot, I love the Raiders to win this game outright. That's why I went Moneyline minus 120. The other game on Thursday night features the Niners at the Chargers. They've also had joint practices all week. We opened with the Chargers -1.5. It has flipped San Francisco's -1.5. Total dropping from 39 to 37.5 at DraftKings. FanDuel has a 39.5. Is that right? Hold on. I want to confirm that because that is a discrepancy of 2 points. That's kind of crazy here. Hang on. Preseason, 39. No, it's 39.5 at FanDuel. Where's my page? And yeah, this says DraftKings 37.5. Let me confirm this real quick. I mean, that's crazy. Why wouldn't we just try to middle that right now? Well, I don't have DraftKings out here, but you get my point. It's 37.5 at 37.5 at DraftKings for Niners and Chargers. So that is correct. If you wanted to try and middle that, I don't hate going over 37.5, under 39.5. That's 2 point wiggle room right there. I mean, you theoretically can't lose depending on the vig. So I don't hate that concept, but I'm kind of shocked that it's that big a discrepancy between the two major sports books out there. So that just jumped out to me here. But as I mentioned, open Chargers -1.5, 39.5 to 37.5 on the total. Niners are going to be playing their starters. That's why we saw this thing flip to -1.5 on San Fran. Jim Harbaugh said he will play his starters a series. Quote, not all of them, but I expect a number of starters to play, unlike last week, is what Kyle Shanahan said. He hasn't told them yet, but they'll find out soon. When asked if Brock Purdy would play, Shanahan said, quote, there's a good chance. So if Purdy plays a little bit, then he hands it off to Mac Jones and Adrian Martinez the rest of the game. I understand why the market's moving in that direction for the Niners, but I think it's going to be mostly Martinez because you also have Curtis Rourke, who's going to be out dealing with a rib injury. I actually am going to take the dog here. I don't think San Francisco really wants these starters to get hurt. They just want to go through the motions. They're dealing with enough injuries. So many guys haven't been available in practice. I'm taking +1.5 on the Chargers. If you want to go +105 on the money line, I don't hate that idea. But Harbaugh doesn't back off from a competition against anyone. I think even after Justin Herbert were to come out of this game, you have Trey Lance and DJ Uiagalelei. I don't hate that combination to figure out this situation for the Chargers at quarterback, while you have a San Fran team that's playing not to lose players, not to lose any starters, and really they can't afford to lose backups at this point. So with that said, give me the Chargers in this spot on Thursday night, +1.5. Jim Harbaugh getting ready for another season, coaching up Justin Herbert. Year one in L.A., 11-6. Year two in L.A., 11-6. They're now the second shot in the West. How does he feel about his quarterback going into their third season together?
It just keeps getting better. He's in a great place in all ways. I mean, you mentioned it. There's a tremendous balance that he has. He's locked, cocked, ready to rock. He's in a great place.
Well, the key for Justin Herbert is staying upright this year because a season ago, he lost his two tackles. The offensive line was banged up. And theoretically, the Chargers tried to fix those issues. They got Slater back. They got Alt back, although Slater's dealing with a knee issue right now in camp coming off the injury from a year ago. They added two new tackles, and they added a center in Tyler Biadasz. The kid from Washington played collegiately at Wisconsin, and that was a huge upgrade. The problem is they just lost their center for the year, most likely. Jake Slaughter, a rookie, second-round pick out of Florida, is going to take over for them. I think they made enough reinforcements or brought in enough reinforcements to take some of that issue away, and Herbert should be able to have clean pockets to throw to. It's just worth noting that offensive line is what did this team in a year ago from reaching their ceiling, and already they're facing injuries right now. One thing that went under the radar with the Chargers, you know, McConkey and Johnston fine at receiver. How about this tight end room? Gadsden back, and they brought in Charlie Kolar from Baltimore and David Njoku from Cleveland. Are we going to see three tight end sets? Because I love all three of those players. So that's where we stand with the NFL and the Chargers. More on the Niners when we return. What's the biggest concern injury-wise right now at Niners camp? John Lund, KNBR, joins us next on Cashing Out.
To Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're listening to VSiN, the sports betting network. Thanks for making us a part of your night, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States. God bless America. We've got preseason football back in our lives, week two, ready to go. Chargers and Niners. And trying to figure out what the Niners are going to look like in the preseason is difficult because so many guys are already injured. Is it the conspiracy with the electrical substation? Is it maybe the Niners training staff is having some issues behind the scenes? We're going to try and answer as many questions as we can with our next conversation. He's John Lund, host of Fair and Balanced, KNBR, on KNBR in San Francisco, at John Lund Radio. You can find him on X, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. So, John, it's a weird offseason. It's a weird training camp as we get set for everything with the Niners this year. We'll just list them off here, and you tell me the one that's the most concerning of the injuries. You have Mike Evans. You have Christian Kirk. You have George Kittle. You have Mykel Williams. And I'm sure I missed one or two. And, oh, by the way, Christian McCaffrey hasn't practiced in a while. What's the one that jumps off the page to you?
Well, every single one of those, and the word at Niners camp this year is tightness. Christian McCaffrey has tightness. Nick Bosa has tightness. Mike Evans has tightness. What they really have is they're all over 30, and that becomes the problem. If you look at the window, George Kittle, I love George Kittle, but he's coming off a major Achilles injury, and he's 32 years old. And you mentioned Christian Kirk, over 30. The magical age for a running back, CMC, Christian McCaffrey, whether he's holding out, which I don't think he is financially, or if it's, you know, just he's 30. Nick Bosa is approaching that. So really, it's a weird dynamic because offensively, you know, Kyle Juszczyk is 35. Offensively, they've got a bunch of guys that are older. But defensively, outside of, you know, there's a couple of guys. There's Fred Warner. There's Dre Greenlaw coming back. Nick Bosa's in the, like, 28, 29 range. But their defense is really, really young. And their offense is older. And that's where all the injuries, or most of the injuries are.
It's kind of been the theme, though, the last couple of years, is all the injuries, the lack of depth. Do you think they have enough depth this year to withstand that? The win total this year is 9.5, John. So expectations have ticked down from the last couple of years. But have they fixed some of those issues of not having backups that are ready to fill in?
Yeah, I mean, at some places they have. I mean, you mentioned the wide receivers. Let's go through them. Mike Evans is out. They call it tightness, but Mike Evans is always there. Christian Kirk hasn't participated in camp at all. Ricky Pearsall already has had PCL surgery. So, you know, Deebo Samuel's coming back. Because of his style, he plays hard. They run the ball a lot with him, Kyle Shanahan. So other than Pearsall, you've got three guys that are older that are expected to start. That's where Dejon Stribling's come in. Stribling, the rookie out of Ole Miss, has been really, really good. Jordan Watkins, who's a second-year speedster, he's going to come in. So at the receiver position, it's not that they can lose a bunch of guys, but they do have some depth there. Where the real problem comes for the 49ers is, and when they were really good, when they had Eric Armstead and they had Buckner and they had Bosa as a rookie, they went to the Super Bowl the first time in Miami against Kansas City. They had a great defensive line. You look at the defensive line right now, they had 20 sacks last year, which is the worst in the NFL. And Nick Bosa's coming back, but Nick Bosa hasn't participated in training camp for a week. And they don't have any other juice besides that. They've got a bunch of young guys that are could be up-and-comers, and they do have a lot of depth along the defensive line, but it's not proven depth. So offensively, they're going to score points. It's Kyle Shanahan. It's Brock Purdy. They'll figure out the receiver position. I think CMC will be healthy enough. Kittle at some point will be healthy. Even though they're older, they'll score. The problem with the 49ers, when they were really elite, they had a great defensive line that put a ton of pressure on, which took the pressure off the secondary. They have a fairly young secondary, and they don't have any way to get to the quarterback, especially if Nick Bosa is not healthy.
John Lund is our guest, KNBR in the Bay Area, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific time at John Lund Radio. You can find him on X. And the development of that D-line for so many years was Robert Saleh. Even, you know, prior to becoming the Jets head coach, that's where he made a name for himself. What have been the early returns so far of Raheem Morris reunited with Kyle Shanahan now in the Bay? He's now the DC of this team. Anything that jumps out with him coming in to take over that unit?
Yeah, because what's interesting is that Kyle has always loved to run, you know, the old Seattle system, and that's where Saleh came from and everything. But Raheem Morris is different, and it's interesting because a couple of years ago, when the last time he went outside the organization for a DC that he didn't hire internally himself or wasn't Robert Saleh, he went with Steve Wilks, and they actually went to the Super Bowl that year, lost to the Chiefs again in Las Vegas, but they just didn't see eye to eye. There was a lot of things they just did not agree on. And so now it's interesting because what Kyle Shanahan wants to do really is be the offensive guy that he is. He worries about all of the, you know, the entire team, but he likes having a veteran defensive coordinator where he can just say, man, just take this thing over. So Raheem Morris is going to be able to do the things that he wants to do, whatever the wrinkles are that he wants to wrinkle. What I've seen and what I've heard is that they might bring a little bit more pressure, at which they didn't really do under Robert Saleh, just because, as I said, they don't have a lot of juice. So they may bring some more blitzes, but what that does, as you well know, is that exposes your secondary. And outside of Deebo Lenore, they just don't have a proven secondary. So while they want to get pressure, that puts the pressure on the back end, and I don't know that they're qualified to do that type of.
Talking Niners, John Lund, host of Fair and Balanced, KNBR in the Bay Area at John Lund Radio. You can find him on X. You mentioned Dejon Stripling, kid out of Ole Miss, really good speed. We see the highlights of him and Brock Purdy connecting, and it looks good. He's shortened up in the offensive rookie of the year market. He's down to 13-1. You could have gotten way north of 20-1 not that long ago. How real do you think this is, what we're hearing and what we're seeing? Because as you touched on, there's so many mouths to feed with Deebo back and Evans there. And DeMarcus Robinson is kind of very underrated. Christian Kirk will eventually get right. Do you think Stribling will see the field enough to contend for this thing?
It's a great question because we all know this in preseason. We all try to tell ourselves. It's like spring training. I'm not going to overreact. But what they start doing is, and you know this, is they start checking boxes. So, okay, he's looking good in shorts. They put on pads. He's looking good and making plays there. Then he gets into a preseason game. He only had 22 snaps last week, and he had 7 catches for 63 yards, and they were all across the board. He went up and used his size. He caught one along the sidelines. He caught one and then bullied his way, you know, inside the 10-yard line. Like, he did it every single way you could do it. I get it. It's only preseason, but to the odds that you just said, look, Mike Evans is already banged up. Christian Kirk hasn't even been in training camp. He might not even make this team. Deebo Samuel is different. They're not going to use him as a true wide receiver. He's going to do some running back things. So I think Deshaun Stripling is going to get some reps, and it wouldn't shock me at all because the way that him and Brock Purdy have really gotten together in a really short order. And you know what's interesting about him too is, okay, you see the stuff on the field. He's one of those rookies that it's not overwhelming. Talk to him a couple of times. He just expects to do these kind of things. And as you said, he's got the size, he's got the speed, dropped to pick 33 in the second round. But he has, from not only the way that he's playing, but just the way he's approaching these things and knowing that the 49ers have injuries and probably will at that wide receiver position, I expect him to have a really good year. And it wouldn't shock me at all if he was, you know, wide receiver two, might even be wide receiver one with the type of injuries these guys have.
Now, John, I'm looking at the odds to win the NFC West. It just goes to show you these windows, they come and go so quickly. We think you're going to be, you know, the team to beat for so long. The Rams are the favorite to win this division at minus 105. They're also the Super Bowl favorite. The defending Super Bowl champs, the Seahawks, are plus 215. The Niners are plus 305. And I should just note that Kyle Shanahan's 11-7 straight up head-to-head against Sean McVay. Is there confidence that this team can still, even with the injuries they're dealing with, get right, get healthy, and actually win this division?
Yeah, I mean, that's everything. And I know that's a lot for – that is the conversation for a lot of teams in the NFL, like the other – unlike the other sports. It's not if you're going to get injuries. It's when you're going to get injuries, to who and for how long. But they've got to figure this whole thing out, because if they're healthy, the type of guy – I mean, they did a nice job in the offseason in filling a lot of holes on this team. But, I mean, the other day I was at practice, they had 20 guys out. And they had 9 starters, and that doesn't even include guys on the pup list like Mikal Williams and George Kittle. So you can say they had 11 guys out, and we're less than a month from this thing. September 10th, they're going to Australia and taking on the Rams. Having said all those things, if they are healthy, and Kyle keeps saying this and John Lynch keeps saying this, that they are, that these are just, you know, a lot of precautionary things and guys are going to be ready. Now, is George Kittle going to be ready for week one? I'm not so sure. Kyle Shanahan said today, or yesterday down in L.A. at the joint practices with the Chargers, that Mikal Williams, the first-round pick last year, the edge rusher out of Georgia, would not be. So they're going to start, you know, kind of behind the eight ball like they always do. But if they're healthy, they can contend with the Rams and the Seahawks. They've proven it before.
Yeah, that seems to be the only concern. If they get right, they get back to 100%. There's no reason this isn't a great bounce back year for the Niners. John, appreciate you doing this, man. Congrats getting back to the Bay. KMBR.
Thanks, man.
We'll be listening 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific at John Lund Radio on X. Thanks as always, and hopefully we'll be chatting soon about a fun Niners season upcoming.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure, man. I love coming on with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man. Awesome stuff, as always, from John. College football season, by the way, it's almost here, and betting it blind's a losing strategy. Get the VSiN College Football Betting Guide free with VSiN Pro. Previews of all 138 FBS teams, our preseason top 50, power ratings, proven betting systems, best bets from all of us here at the network. I've got a couple win totals I like. I have a Heisman play that I love. You have to become a VSiN Pro to check that out. VSiN.com/subscribe. You'll also get the NFL Betting Guide, the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide, and everything we do at the website, including 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Try today, $9.99, or lock in a full year. Save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. When we return, we'll stay in college football. Bunch of players deemed eligible, impacts a team in the SEC. Another in the SEC will be without its best player and a starting quarterback named in the ACC. That's next on Cashing Out.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Dustin Swedelson coming to you from the Circus Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas. Me here, you there. Appreciate you making us part of your night, however you may be tuning in. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Still to come on the program, a lot to get into in the next hour, including a fun long shot for NFL MVP, a narrative that's already being built in the preseason, that via money moves. JVT and Stormy Bonantoni, I'll play that in 30 minutes from now. 15 minutes from right now, we go to Raiders camp as Adam Hill's on the beat covering that team. Fernando Mendoza plans to play a lot in this preseason matchup against the Texans. Will we see Kirk Cousins? Because right now I'm on the Raiders minus 120. Curious to hear what the buzz is around the Raiders right now getting set for that matchup with the Houston Texans. But right now, I want to remind everyone in case they missed it, a trade went down in the NBA on Wednesday night. So the Cleveland Cavaliers have acquired Peyton Watson from the Denver Nuggets. Also in the deal, the Clippers have acquired Max Strus. And I know what you're probably thinking. Hold on. Peyton Watson to the Cavs? Max Strus to the Clippers? What is Denver getting back? Because Peyton Watson's a 23-year-old that they developed coming off a season where he averaged 14.6 points per game. He shot 41% from three, averaged almost five boards and over two assists. They must be getting something back because over the years, they've never surrounded Nikola Jokic with what is necessary to get back and win a second championship. Well, the Denver Nuggets have received back for that trade a 2031 first-round pick, so that is 5 years from now, and a 2032 second-round pick, which is 6 years from now. And Peyton Watson is signing a four-year, $88 million deal with the Cavs. This is all to stay under the luxury cap. This is the unfortunate element of the salary cap is the teams that do spend the most, they get taxed the most, and the Denver Nuggets now are a team that you can't take seriously in the Western Conference with so many other teams making tweaks and improvements and trying to you know, knock off Oklahoma City and take down the Spurs before Wemby wins a title. Now you have the Nuggets, a team that we're kind of always penciling in to be in the mix because if you have Jokic, you have a shot against anybody. They're the third shot in the Western Conference. I would consider flyers on Minnesota, who's 13-1, a little bit longer ahead of them. And I might even take a stab at a longer bet like a Houston Rockets or a Dallas Mavericks at 80-1 before I consider betting the Denver Nuggets because it feels like Nikola Jokic now, with the cheapness of this ownership group, with the moves that they've made and not giving him and Jamal Murray enough help, he's got to be on borrowed time. He's only got so many more years to win a title. So it does feel like this could be the beginning of the end of Jokic in Denver. In my opinion, I have no reason, like no information that would push me in that direction. It's just a vibes thing. The vibes can't be good. And Nikola Jokic, he doesn't love playing basketball enough for the vibes to be good, to be this bad. He'd prefer go play with his horses and go to the track every day. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. The Denver Nuggets next year, third shot in the West. And I actually think they should be behind Minnesota. And there might be a case that they should be behind the Lakers with the depth that they've added as well, who are 19-1 to win the Western Conference. As college football is approaching, it is, I mean, it's what, like 10 days away, something like that? Let me get there. How many days until week zero? These are things that you're supposed to do before the show. Unfortunately, I did not. 8 days. See, I was off. 8 days until week zero. And college football is here. FCS will kick it off. Then a few of the big boys get going on that Saturday slate. With that, we are highlighting the top stories in the college football world with the campus crawl. And this news came down earlier today. We were waiting for it, and we got it. A court ruled that 16 players previously deemed ineligible are now getting a fifth year of eligibility in college football. This decision is not the same one that's going on with the U.S. District Court in Colorado, which granted the 2022 recruits last month an extra year of eligibility. This order allows the former class of 22 recruits who exhausted their fourth season of college eligibility this spring a fifth season in 2026-27. So basically, you get a fifth year here now. The names that make the most impact, first off, LSU will get edge Jack Pyburn there. He was actually in Bucks camp. He is going to go back to college most likely. I didn't see an official report, but 51 tackles, two sacks last season. You also have JMU, James Madison. Their former linebacker, Trent Hendricks, Sun Belt Defensive Player of the Year, he is eligible now. Oregon State running back Anthony Hankerson, who was in camp with the Seahawks, he is now eligible. And SMU running back TJ Hayden, who's been at a couple spots, he's hitting the portal. He's available. But the team that will benefit the most, assuming these players go back to that school, would be three players from Ole Miss last season that made that run in the college football playoff. Ole Miss D lineman Xavier Harris, 58 tackles, three sacks. Ole Miss safety Wydette Williams, 73 tackles, three interceptions. But the guy, if the Rebels can retain and bring back, he's currently with the Cleveland Browns in training camp, is tight end Daquan Wright. Daquan Wright, last season, 39 catches, 635 yards, five touchdowns. But more importantly, Ole Miss lost its top two wide receivers. He would be calm for Trinidad Chambliss, that one piece that he really trusts and has a rapport with coming back to the school. I haven't seen official reports on what all these guys are doing. The assumption is they're going back to school, but I don't know if we can just assume they go back to the school they were previously at, because a couple guys here have already hit the portal. But if Ole Miss can retain two or all three of those guys, I love the situation for them, and I'm not high on Ole Miss this year. Win total 7.5. I was originally slam the under. I'm a little bit hesitant to do that now if they're able to get these guys returning. Their schedule opens up with Louisville and Charlotte, and Louisville could be a coin flip game. But then it's LSU at Florida, Vandy on the road, Missouri at Texas, Auburn, Oklahoma, Wofford, Mississippi State. They're probably a 7-win team, but if I'm just a little wrong about them, they could be an 8-win team, which would put them over the total of 7.5. The over is juiced at minus 170. I think Daquan Wright's the biggest coup, though, if he somehow comes back to Oxford here. So we'll keep you posted as more information comes out with that ruling about these players. Staying in the SEC for our next story, South Carolina. They may be without edge Dylan Stewart at the start of the season. Offensive tackle Jacarius Peak also may not be available. He's trending towards a return to the practice field, according to reports, but it sounds like may not be ready for week one. Shane Beamer told On3 that neither of these are long-term injuries. And if you look at South Carolina's schedule, I'm not sure they need either of them. Week one against Kent State, week two against Towson, week three against Mississippi State, though. That one is in Columbia. I think you need them back for that, because Mississippi State has Kamario Taylor at quarterback. That dude is fun to watch, and now he has a chance to like have a full season as the starter. I think that could be a challenge for them if they don't have a guy in Dylan Stewart, who's a potential top-10 pick here. He dealt with back injuries a season ago, but he's a potential game-changing edge rusher immediately at the next level. For South Carolina, they're going to need him back, especially when SEC play begins. And then after that, this is kind of brutal, man. They go to Alabama. They host Kentucky, who's going to be better. They go to the Swamp to face Florida. Then they have Tennessee at Oklahoma hosting A&M. They'll probably get a win at Arkansas, but after that, they host Georgia, and they finish with Clemson on the road at Clemson this year. I know people are down on Clemson. It's still a rivalry game that matters in the Palmetto State, but I have them at 5 wins at the Clemson game, even with Dylan Stewart potentially being back, right? I think they're going to lose at the Swamp. I think they lose at Alabama. They're going to lose at home to Tennessee. They're going to lose at Oklahoma. They'll lose at home to A&M, and they'll definitely lose to Georgia. So outside of Kent State week one, Towson week two, maybe Mississippi State week three at home. I'm only giving them the edge because it's at home. And then Arkansas late, that's 4 wins, maybe 5 because Kentucky. I miss Kentucky, but I think Kentucky can beat them. Let's say that's 5 wins. You still need 2 more to go over 6.5. The over's even money. The under's minus 130. I like that. And the reason why people might believe in South Carolina is Lenora Sellers is back. Lenora Sellers returns for his final season of college. He was asked how classes are going.
Got a couple off-topic questions for you. With your degree, are you pretty close to finishing that up? Or?
Yeah, so I'm done with all my classes. I just got my internship this semester, so that's all I'm doing.
Okay, what is your internship here?
I'm doing Partee, just facility management, stuff like that, cutting grass, picking up balls, little stuff like that.
He is literally doing nothing for his final year of college. He's focused on football. He better be locked in and ready to go, because they're going to need him this year. And I don't know what to make of Sellers, because he burst on the scene. He was not a big recruit. He was amazing. Then it feels like defenses figured out how to defend him, especially where he was dangerous on third down with that run threat. Defenses kind of keyed in on what he wanted to do and took that away a season ago. We'll see if he can rebound this year. If he can be that guy that people thought could be a Heisman winner, they'll go over the win total, South Carolina, but I like the under. And then our last story here is Stanford. They named Davis Warren the starting quarterback this season. Warren, previously at Michigan, he will take over as the guy in his sixth year of college football, spent 5 years in Ann Arbor, played in 17 games, did have 9 starts in 2024, and he completed 64% of his passes, almost 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, tore his ACL last year. If he can throw the ball, it brings a little bit of balance here to this offense, but this defense held them together a season ago. I don't know what they get out of the offense. The win total's 3.5. And I see Elon as a win on their schedule. Outside of that, they've got 4 coin flips, and I don't know if they're capable of winning 3 of them. So I'd lean under on Stanford, 3.5 wins in 2026.